Jaina Tasmaya Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Mahavishnu Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Sahayam Prakadamayam Dattati Shapanatikam. Manjika Kapatu Vyasya Kipasindu Vaya Vichara Patitanam Pagalego Vaisya Devi Namaha. Krishna has returned after 1 year of the absence of the cowherd boys and the calves. He's returned as a great festival. Back to Brajatown after bringing back the cowherd boys and the calves. And after hearing the prayers of Lord Brahma. Then, as we heard a hint of yesterday, King Maharaj Prickett asked a question. O Brahmana, who is he speaking to? Sukadeva Goswami. O Brahmana, how could the cowherd women have developed for Krishna, someone else's son, such unprecedented pure love? Who are the cowherd women being spoken about here? These are the elderly gopis, because they had great love, more than for their own children, for the expansions of Krishna. So how could they have developed for Krishna, someone else's son, such unprecedented pure love? They never felt even for their own children. Please explain this. We'll read the comment of Sridhar Swami on this text. So what's the question? And what specific form of Krishna? The one when he had expanded into the more or less exact replicas of their own sons. And they asked, and it was stated that they loved those sons who were Krishna even more than their own sons. So how is this possible? Because it's natural that one loves one's own son, one's own children, the most. So Srila Sridhar Swami states, in this verse, Vrag Ocham Tva Tokeshus Neha Balabdham Anvaham Shaner Nisima Vavridhe Yata Krishna Tvapurva Vat. That was in text 26 of the 13th chapter. It states, I don't have it right here, but something to the effect of, although the inhabitants of Brajabhumi, the coward men and women, previously had more affection for Krishna than for their own children, now for 1 year their affection for their own sons continually increased, for Krishna had now become their sons. There was no limit to the increment of their affection for their sons, who are now Krishna. Every day they found new inspiration for loving their children as much as they love Krishna. So that's the question. How is this possible? So he continues, although the inhabitants of Brajabhumi had more affection for Krishna than their own children, now for 1 year their affection for their own sons continually increased, for Krishna had now become their sons. There was no limit to the increment of their affection for their sons, who are now Krishna. Every day they found new inspiration for loving their children as much as they love Krishna. Again, that was the verse. And Sridhar Swami's comment is, here it is stated that how they had greater love for Krishna, someone else's son, than even for their own sons. In that regard, Prickett Maharaj inquired in the verse beginning, Brahman. So that's what it was referring to, that text in the previous chapter, text 26, text 50, Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, he begins his reply, O King, and he's going to explain first how the non-discriminating person thinks. O King, for every created being, the dearmost thing is certainly his own self. The dearness of everything else, children, wealth, and so on, is due only to the dearness of the self. So according to the proximity, or another way to look at it, is according to how much one invests his feeling of self, of this is me, and this is mine, according to how much one invests of himself into something, that thing is dear to him. So of course the dearest thing to everyone in the material world is their bodies, because they fully identify with their bodies. And then their families, my family, because their body is part of that family. Or my nation, and the further it gets away, the more expanded it gets, the more distant from the self it gets, the more expanded it gets, the feeling of dearness diminishes to some degree. But in any case, the dearness of everything else, Sukadeva Goswami says, children, wealth, and so on, is due only to the dearness of the self. So this in this verse and the next two verses, he describes the thoughts of the non-discriminating person who are identifying with the body. So everyone is self-centered, thinking themselves the center of everything, everything connected to themselves there, as Prabhupada would call it, the expanded selfishness. If my car gets hit by another car, I'm very upset because I invest my feeling of self in that car. But if your car gets hit, I don't care, even though I say, oh, Prabhu, so sad. But really, no one cares, because they haven't, unless it's someone who is my friend, if there's that feeling of minus invested in that person, then one also feels some difficulty, of course, because of the proximity or the investiture of the self. So for this reason, we'll read these two verses, two more verses, O best of kings, the embodied soul is self-centered. He is more attached to his own body and self than to his so-called possessions, like children, wealth, and home. So everything that he invests that feeling of self in, he's attached to, but it's because of that feeling of connection to the body that he has that attachment. So his greatest attachment is to the body itself, and then expanded from that, there is lesser attachment, but yet attachment still, children, wealth, and home. 52, again, this is the self-centered, bewildered type of person, lacking discrimination. Indeed, for persons who think the body is the self, O best of kings, those things whose importance lies only in the relationship to the body are never as dear as the body itself. So, an interesting point is being made here, saying that the most dear thing is the sense of self, and if we invest ourselves in the body, sense of self in the body, then the most dear thing is the body and everything connected to the body, but none of the things connected to the body are quite as dear as the body itself. So we'll read some comments on these texts up to 50, 51 and 52. So Sanatana Goswami comments on text 50. Because of Lord Krishna's being directly the Supreme Soul, it is fitting there is greater love for him than even one's own relatives. So this is actually the truth. So he's not talking here about the less discriminating souls. He's bringing it to a more ultimate point. Naturally, because we're not the body, it is fitting because he's the Paramatma, the Supreme Soul. So it is fitting that every living entity, every soul naturally has greater affection for Krishna than to everything else. So in order to express this idea, this is what Sukadeva Goswami is ultimately going to say. So in order to express this idea, in answer to the question of Sukadeva, of Prakrit Maharaj, why were they so attached to Krishna? It's not natural, everyone should be attached to their own sons. He's going to ultimately express that idea that Krishna is the Supreme Soul and everyone is naturally most attached to him. So to express this idea, first of all, it is shown how the self is by nature most dear, and the affection one has for other things is superficially relative to that. That is stated in the verse beginning with the word Sarvesham. Sanatana Goswami says, he says, or rather we'll read Vishwanath, 650. In five verses, 50 through 54, Sukadeva explains, O King, in this material world it is seen that the natural tendency is to love oneself more than one's children or other persons one may claim as one's own. By understanding this, one will come to understand the final truth. So he's going to explain something in an interesting way. Then in the next text, in text 51, we'll read Sanatana Goswami's comment. And he says, the words beginning Mama Talambi imply that it is fitting for one's affection to the repository of mindness, in other words, that sense, the investiture, as I called it, of the sense of mindness. It is fitting for that affection to be in one's children and so on, to be lesser, relatively lesser in comparison to one's own self, the repository of I-ness. So the sense of I-ness has the strongest sense of feeling to it, and my-ness, as he explained, that which is mine, has somewhat lesser. O King of Kings, because that the word is used in here. What is the Sanskrit for that? I know it's a Kendra in some places here. It must be Rajendra. Raja Indra, or the King of Kings, or the Best of Kings. Also, Eka Indra, Ikendra, means the King of Kings, the Best of Kings also. Implies that you are aware of the fact there is not so much affection even for the kingdom as there is for oneself. Then, the next text, which is explaining a similar point, we'll read Sanatana Goswami, 52. Here he says, O Best of Kings implies that some kings say that the body is the self. Some are Brahmavadis who say that the self is everything. And those who are theists, so there are some who say the body is the self. There are some, who, like the Brahmavadis, who say that the self is everything. And then there are the theists, they are superior, the ones who say there is a Supreme Lord. And amongst these, because you are uniquely dear to Lord Krishna, you are the best. So that implies something very wonderful, that the best of persons is the one who is dear to Krishna. And what makes one dear to Krishna is that it is then everyone is dear to Krishna, but yayatam mam prapadyante, when one loves Krishna, Krishna naturally reciprocates with that by making that soul, that devotee, dear to him. And this is really the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how to become dear to Krishna by making Krishna dear to us. How to love Krishna with great, great spontaneous affection. So text 53, he's continuing with the logic. If a person comes to the stage of considering the body mine instead of me, he will certainly not consider the body as dear as his own self, because one, that which one considers mine is not as dear to one as that which one considers I. So he will not consider, if a person thinks my body is mine, he will not consider the body as dear as his own self. After all, even as the body is growing old and useless, one's desire to continue living remains strong. Why? Because he's not as attached to the body as he is to his self, his sense of self. And when one is very old, even one without knowledge, even though he's so attached to the body, he thinks, oh, my body is old. He doesn't think I am old. He thinks, my body is getting so old. He looks like that. So he naturally sees some kind of a difference between himself and his body. And even there can be a detesting of the body while naturally loving himself. So he'll think himself, I, and his body is his. So here's the purport, Bhaktivedanta purport here. The word mamata bhak is very significant here. An ordinary foolish person thinks, I am this body. A more discriminating intelligent person thinks, this is my body. In the literature and folklore of ordinary people, we find the common theme of an old, decrepit person dreaming of obtaining a new young body. Thus, even ordinary persons pick up the notion of self-realization, instinctively understanding that it is possible for the soul to exist in many different bodies. As the body of an intelligent person becomes old and useless, he strongly desires to live, even when he knows that his body cannot live much longer. This indicates that he is gradually becoming aware that his self is more important than his body. Thus, simply the desire for life can indirectly bring one to a preliminary understanding of self-realization. In other words, a distinction between the self and the body. And in this case as well, one's basic attachment is to one's own self and not to that which supposedly belongs to oneself. It may be pointed out that the entire discussion between Maharaj Prickett and Sukadev Goswami regarding the dearness of one's own self is ultimately meant for broaching the subject of why the cows and cowherd ladies of Vrindavan considered Krishna more dear than their own selves, and certainly more dear than their own offspring. The discussion proceeds as follows. We'll also read the comment of Srila Sridhar Swami in text 53. Even when growing old, even when death is approaching, there is a desire to remain alive. The idea is as follows. Even though it is certain that it will not continue to live, there is a focusing of love upon the body which is reconciled as actually aimed at the self. So there is a feeling that I want to live. Even though it is clear that the body cannot live. So when that desire to live is identified by the discriminating person, it does not become as dear as the very self. Thus, they are not so much fixed in that identification with the desire to remain living in a particular body. They want to live, but it is separate from their body. So it's a somewhat a subtle psychological point. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on this. This verse explains how the materialists who affirm that the material body is itself eventually becomes wise. Then they also understand that self is the soul, not the material body, and the soul is to be loved, not the material body. The body is dear only because of the soul. When a person who thinks, I am this body, becomes a little wise, he begins to understand, I am not this body. Rather, this body is mine. At that time, the soul becomes dear to him because the sense of I-ness is dearer than what belongs to the I or that which is mine. At that time, the soul becomes dear to him and his own self. Then the material body is not as dear as the soul to him. This means the body is only dear because it has a relationship with the soul. And that's also clear by, say, if I have a beloved friend, and he is my friend. So if he is dying, I'm feeling terrible. But what is it that is mine, and what am I attached to? Because when the body dies, you burn the body quickly. And you cry when the person dies, because the person is actually gone, although the body is right there. So what is actually dear to someone? It is the soul. Clearly it is the soul. So the bodies are only dear because of its relationship with the soul. The second half of this verse gives the direct experience of ordinary persons as evidence to prove this. A person may see that the death of the material body is naturally very painful. Thus he will pray, let my death not be painful. Although such a person may intelligently understand that he's actually a spirit soul and not the material body, still his yearning to remain alive in the material body may even be stronger than that knowledge. So he's thinking, may my death not be painful. To who? To me. My body's going to die and I don't want to suffer. So there's some subtle psychological distinction being made between the body and the self, even amongst a material, for a materialistic person. Text 54. Therefore, it is his own self that is most dear to every embodied living being. And it is simply for the satisfaction of this self that the whole material creation of moving and non-moving entities exists. The word, the purport here, the word characharam indicates moving living entities, such as animals, and non-moving living entities, such as trees. Or the word may also refer to moving possessions, such as one's family and pets, and non-moving possessions, such as one's house and household paraphernalia. So everyone is thinking that the whole material creation is existing for the satisfaction of the self. And he's identifying the self generally with the body. So you should know, and now Sukadeva is bringing it towards the point. To the point. You should know Krishna to be the original self, the original soul of all living entities. So everything is dear. The body is dear to one because of the self. So he's moving from out to in. And our family is dear to us because of its relationship with the central point of the soul, the self. And our country is dear to us because of its relationship with the body, and ultimately because of the identification of the self with the body. And therefore, because Krishna is the soul of the soul, he is the super soul, therefore we are dear to ourself because of Krishna, because we invest our sense of self in the self, we are feeling our self is dear. But when that investiture of sense of self transfers to Krishna, then Krishna becomes most dear. And what does that mean to transfer the sense of self to Krishna? It means thinking of oneself. When one thinks of oneself, one cannot think of anything other than being Krishna's servant. This is a complete understanding of who I am. I cannot say who I am accurately without saying my name in relationship to Krishna. Therefore, at initiation, one changes one's name, because the name that we have at this point, before initiation, is in relationship to the body and the family. The surname is in relationship to the body and to our family, and our first name is in relationship to our own specific body. So that sense of identification of the self with this body, which is in relationship to the family, is shifted. This is the significance of changing the name at initiation. And one is supposed to become identified with being a servant of Krishna. So there is always Dasa Dasi after the name, and the names are always in relationship to Krishna, such as Krishna. So this is the meaning of the changing names, and it signifies a changing of a sense of identity. And why do we wear tilak? For the same reason, because the body, the sense of body, should be changed, because the body is naturally dear to everyone. So when we decorate the body with tilak, it signifies that this body, which I'm so attached to, is a temple in which the Lord Krishna lives in. So it's decorated in such a way that it is pleasing to Him with tilak. It is done for His pleasure. And then naturally, when one identifies, because one's a servant of Krishna, so again, it's the point of changing one's identification to being a servant of Krishna, and the changing of the identification of the body from being the self to being a temple in which Krishna lives. Myself as the soul who is a servant of the Supreme Lord Krishna lives. So this is the idea that who we are is Krishna's. And therefore, who is the dearest to every living entity is naturally Krishna. So therefore, again, in text 55, it says, you should know that Krishna to be the original soul of all living entities. Again, the body grows on the basis of the soul. And similarly, the soul exists on the basis of the super soul. There is no existence of the body without the soul within it. Immediately, as soon as the soul leaves the body, it immediately starts to decompose. Immediately, instantaneously. So similarly, the soul cannot exist. The eternal soul's existence rests upon Krishna. There is no such thing as an independent existence. So naturally, that Krishna is so dear to the soul because he exists in relationship to Krishna. So you should know Krishna. This is what Sukadev Goswami is answering Prakrit Maharaj. Because Krishna the whole pastime that he's telling is that Krishna was a little boy standing before Brahma. How could he be the most dear one to everyone? And Sukadev says, you should know that Krishna to be the original soul of all living entities. For the benefit of the whole universe, he has, out of his causeless mercies, appeared as an ordinary human being. He has done this by the strength of his internal potency. Sambhavam yatma mayaya. We'll read Sanatana Goswami's comment on text 55. The idea of Sanatana Goswami's comment, the soul of all souls, of all knowers of the field, the super soul, on the basis of him being the indwelling controller. This indwelling controller, the son of Sri Yasoda, or in this form, he has descended into this world. That is why Krishna was so dear to everyone. It's the most natural thing, because he is none different from the super soul. even though he appeared just like a little boy, know who he is. Like an embodied being, just as another person appears as small, and that occurs by the illusory energy, it being the fact that although when there's a lack of factual knowledge about Krishna, he appears to be mundane, he is in fact, in all respects, supra-mundane, beyond mundane, beyond matter. This very fact has been stated in the beginning. Isha indicates that in fact, he most usually manifests himself in his supreme opulence. Or by his maya, meaning his mercy, he becomes as if an embodied being, a jiva, and completely manifests, is resplendent. By the whole described logic, you should understand that Lord Krishna, for the benefit of the whole world, is the soul of all souls, and that have been established as dear. In other words, you should understand that he has incarnated in his identity of Krishna for eradicating the suffering of the world and for enjoying supreme bliss. But it may be questioned, if it is said that affection for Krishna is a matter of designating him as the supersoul, then why is it that such affection does not arise on the part of demons, who in fact fulfill that qualification? They also have a supersoul. So why don't they have affection for Krishna? This is replied to in the words beginning, Sopya. That's in the last Sopya Atra Deva Vabati Mayaya. Even though he is devoid of any distinction between embodied and body, to these fallen souls, the demons and so on, he appears as if a mundane embodied personality by maya, by his covering potency, because by nature he is the reservoir of pure ecstatic love and can only be properly realized through such love. This very idea is stated in the Mahavaraha Purana, Deha Dehi Vibhaga Tra Nevare Vidyate Kratchi. In the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we never see any distinction of body and embodied. The idea is as follows. Only when there is no covering can be experienced as dear. In that world in which people are found to slander him, as if some soul covered by faults, still that covering can be completely driven away simply by devotional service. Thus, on the scale of gradation of pure love, which are based on different levels of devotional service, the residents of Braja have the greatest love for Lord Krishna on account of their super excellent worship. So these points are quite philosophical here. There's a point by Jiva Goswami, I believe. Short point. The intended idea is stated by the verse beginning Krishnam, that this Krishna, the original soul, is appearing as the son of Sri Yasoda in this world for the benefit of the whole world. So this is the answer to the question, why is he dear to everyone? Because he's not just Krishna, little boy. Because he is the super soul. He is appearing as if an embodied soul, as if by the distinction of body and soul, he possesses a nature contrary to his true identity. Like we possess natures contrary to our true identity because of the distinction between our body and ourselves. And not only is he the original identity of all living beings, but he is also ultimately of all matter as well. All matter comes from him. He is going to state that in the next verse too. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. This verse establishes the conclusion of the discussion. When one sees the truth, he realizes that the individual spirit soul is only an intermediate object of love. The final highest object of love is Sri Krishna alone. Brahma said, so that's the point that he wants to make, that Krishna is the object of everyone's love, not even the body, not even one's own self, the soul. Brahma said, Krishna is the soul of the universe and the super soul present in the hearts of all conditioned souls. A person loves children and other persons because they bring pleasure to his own material body. In the same way, a person loves his own material body because it brings pleasure to himself, the spirit soul. Also, in the same way, a person loves his true self, his spiritual identity, because he brings pleasure to the super soul. The super soul is Sri Krishna, whose spiritual form is perfect and complete. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna declares, Vistabhyaham idam kritsnam ekam senasti to jagat. With a single fragment of myself, I convey and support the entire universe. The conclusion is that because Krishna is the highest object of love, the greatest love is felt for him. So this point is very important to have deeply ingrained in our consciousness. And it comes out again just at the end of the Rasa Leela sections, where Prakrit Maharaj will ask the question, how is it that Krishna is dancing with the wives of others? And he explains, ultimately, Sukadeva answers the same point. Ultimately, everyone is, Krishna is the Ishwara. He's the husband ultimately of everyone, of every living entity. So there's no question of him, of him dancing with anyone else's wives, because he is ultimately connected to everyone in this way. So it's very important to understand this point so deeply, because the intimate, more intimate pastimes of Krishna begin in the next chapter. Thus the Braja Gopis love Krishna even more than they love their own sons. Furthermore, how can the conditioned souls who have no love and devotion for Krishna and whose knowledge is covered by Maya directly perceive Lord Krishna, who is revealed only by bhakti? They cannot directly perceive Krishna because such persons have given up all their love to their children and others. However, because Vrijabhasis were beyond the touch of Maya and full of love for Krishna, they could directly perceive the Lord. Thus it was natural that they showed more love for Krishna than their own sons. When Krishna appears in this world to benefit the conditioned souls, the ignorant think that he has a material body like their own, a body created by Maya. But that is only an appearance, not the fact. And then there are many verses quoted by Madhusudan Saraswati, the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur includes. Or some anyway. And text 56. Those in this world who understand Lord Krishna as he is see all things, whether stationary or moving, as manifest forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such enlightened persons recognize no reality apart from the Supreme Lord Krishna. And here's a comment from Prabhupada. So it's bringing up to the point that everything rests on Krishna, whether it's moving, non-moving. Our very selves rest upon Krishna. So he's naturally the object of love. He's the all-powerful, the all-attractive Lord. And in the purport here, there's an inclusion of a comment by Prabhupada from the Krishna book. In his Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead book, Srila Prabhupada comments on this verse as follows. Without being an expansion of Krishna, nothing can be attractive. Whatever is attractive within the cosmic manifestation is due to Krishna. Krishna is therefore the reservoir of all pleasure. The active principle of everything is Krishna, and highly elevated transcendentalists see everything in connection with him. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is stated that a Mahabhagavata, a highly advanced devotee, sees Krishna as the active principle in all movable and immovable living entities. Therefore, he sees everything within this cosmic manifestation in relationship to Krishna. So why did they love Krishna? It's because he is the soul of all souls. Everything in existence rests upon him. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on text 56, a short comment. This verse states that after considering all the objects of love, such as sons, body and soul, the wise conclude that Krishna is the ultimate object of love. In this verse, the word vastutaha, in truth, has the sense of but finally. Therefore, those who know Krishna see him as the cause of all moving and non-moving entities, because Krishna is the creator of all. In one sense, he is the same as his creation. Continuing. And then there'll be a summary after this 57th verse of Brahma's prayers. The original unmanifested form of material nature is the source of all material things, and the source of even the subtle material nature is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. Then, what then could one ascertain to be separate from him? Sanatana Goswami comments. So, the point, again and again, is to show how Krishna is not an ordinary person, that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is what Brahma checked Krishna to see his actual position. And this was the conclusion of Brahma. And this is the conclusion of Sukadeva Goswami. And this is the conclusion of every speaker of the Bhagavatam, of every most highly developed, exalted spiritualist. They accept Krishna is not an ordinary person, because if you ask to us at this point, hearing, sitting in Krishna's temple, in the temple of Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu and Prabhupada's temple, we say, why do we have to say this again and again and again, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and he's not ordinary? But if you talk to any person in this world, practically speaking, and you tell them, first of all, you separate the atheist, that this is God, that there is a God, his name is Krishna. The atheists don't believe in anything. And then you talk to the religionist and spiritualist, the theists, and they are all impersonalists. Practically, each and every one of them are impersonalists. And even the personalists amongst the theists have a very, very vague understanding of God. So as soon as you say, Krishna is God, he's a person, he has form, he has characteristics, he plays a flute, he wanders in the fields of Vrindavan. And here, read about Krishna. Read about Krishna's activities, they'll say, oh, this is mythology, just a story. So this point has to be spoken again and again, so that we, the hearers, really get it clear. Because especially now, because Krishna is entering the Vrindavan forest as of the next chapter, we should have it really clear that the Supreme Absolute Truth is, yes, he's impersonal. Advaya Gyan. If one approaches him impersonally, he reveals his impersonal feature, how he is everything. Soham. But if one approaches him with devotion, Dasoham, then he reveals himself as Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the cause of all causes, who is the reservoir of all pleasure, whom Vistavyahamidam Krishnamekam Senastito Jagat, everything is resting upon him. And he reveals his most intimate aspects of these most intimate aspects of his personality to those who love him, who are walking in the footsteps and following the teachings or the example of the Brijbasis ultimately. And this is the teachings of Mahaprabhu. And this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to deliver to the world. The methodology of achieving it by the holy name, and also the most wonderful degree of intimacy of love for Krishna. All the most intimate possible for a soul to achieve is to love Krishna in the mood of the residents of Vrindavan, completely, spontaneously, devoid of any tinges of awe and reverence. They just simply love Krishna. He may be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He may not be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All we know is that he's the most wonderful. He's the most wonderful person. This is the highest intimacy of love. But yet, before we enter into that platform, we have to be fully fixed in understanding who Krishna is. That he's not an ordinary, he's not some mythological figure, nor is he some powerful person that so much power and so many activities have been ascribed to him. We have to be touched by the depth of realization of Sukadeva Goswami and of the Acharyas. Because there's no way one can prove it. How are we going to prove logically to an atheistical person that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God? And how can we do it? We cannot prove it by logic. We cannot prove it by direct experience. Because the proof is always Shastra. And they don't accept Shastra. They don't accept the authority of these great souls. So, but we want to be touched by that, their faith, their authority, their contact with the internal energy. So the point, again and again, it is natural for everyone to love Krishna. It is natural for the residents of Vrindavan, the elderly ladies and the cows, to have more love for Krishna than their own offspring. Because this is natural, because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which also implies that it is completely natural for us. And it is one of the commentators just said that as long as we invest our love, who was that? Was that Vishwanath? Yes. I'll read this paragraph again. The conclusion is that, this is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, is that because Krishna is the highest object of love, the greatest love is felt for him. Thus the Braja Gopis love Krishna even more than they love their own sons. Furthermore, so they were able to do that because they had, all their love was invested in Krishna. Furthermore, how can the conditioned souls who have no love and devotion for Krishna and whose knowledge is covered by Maya directly perceive Lord Krishna, who is revealed only by bhakti? They cannot directly perceive Krishna because such persons have given all their love to their children and others. So as long as we give our love to our bodies, to our minds, to all the things connected, expanded from these things, and we don't give our love to the soul of all souls, Krishna, then we will not be able to perceive Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and love him in the mood and in according to the means spontaneously that the Brajavasis love Krishna. So it is very important, and therefore it is emphasized, especially because in the next chapter Krishna is entering Vrindavan. And we're going to actually, at the end of the next chapter, chapter 15, there is the first, in three verses, there is the, when after Krishna enters the Vrindavan forest, then he kills Dhanukasura, then he returns to Vrindavan. And you get the first, in three verses, description of the budding purvarag of the Braja Gopis before they had direct contact with Krishna. But when Krishna enters the forest, there is in three verses the wonderful description of their meeting through their glances. It is wonderful. So one can't think this is ordinary. Nothing to do with ordinary. It is extraordinary. The most extraordinary. So therefore the point again is after hearing Brahma's prayer, Sukadeva is mentioning it here again too to prepare us. So what? Nothing is separate from him. He's all pervading, all powerful. Everything rests upon him. Yet there he is, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then a very famous, wonderful verse. Samasita ye parapalava plavam mahatpadam punyayesho murari bhavambudhi vasavadam parampadam padam padam yadvibadam natesham. For those who have accepted the abode of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation and is famous as Murari, the enemy of the Mura demon, the ocean of the material world is like the water contained in a calf's hoofprint. Their goal, those persons, their goal is Param Padam, Vaikuntha, the place where there are no material miseries, not the place where there is danger at every step. So this was explained previously by the four Kumaras, described how one should take shelter of the Parapalava, the lotus feet of the Lord, and they compared them to a boat right at the end of their prayers in the fourth canto. So here it is, this is the point. That we should take full shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, and by the boat of those feet, we should cross over this gigantic ocean of the material world, and the ocean will become insignificant by the power of these holy lotus feet, and get out of this material world, which is such a dangerous place. It is not an enjoyable place. It is a dangerous place. According to the translation is taken from Srila Prabhupada's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 2, text 51. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, this verse summarizes the knowledge presented in this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. One section, summarized, one verse, take shelter of Krishna. Brahma has said this. You're so unlimitedly powerful, even though you're standing here like a boy. Take shelter of Krishna. Take shelter of Krishna. Serve Krishna with devotion. Don't take shelter of your own body. Don't take shelter of your mind, your family, your country, your possessions, your wealth. Take shelter of Krishna. Lord Krishna's lotus feet are described as palava, flower buds, because they are most tender and of a pinkish hue. According to Srila Sanatana Goswami, the word palava also indicates that Lord Krishna's lotus feet are just like desire trees, which can fulfill all the desires of the Lord's pure devotees. Even exalted devotees like Sri Narada, who are themselves the great shelter for the conditioned souls in this universe, personally, take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. Thus it is natural that when Lord Krishna manifests himself as all the young boys in caves of Vrindavan, their parents were more attracted to them than previously. Lord Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure, being all attractive, the ultimate object of everyone's love. Srila Swami says, because Krishna alone is the supreme goal, liberation is attained without endeavor by those who take exclusive shelter of him. This purport of the entire section is summarized in the verse beginning Samasrita. Punya Yesho means he whose glories are pious, and that person is Murari. His bud-like lotus feet are a boat, and those who have taken shelter of them, which are the shelter of the great souls. Or those feet are also great, and thus, for such persons, the ocean of material existence becomes merely the hoofprint of a calf. Moreover, they get the supreme padam, the place known as Sri Vaikuntha, and they never again experience the sense gratification that is the place of dangers that no longer exists for them. Sanatana Goswami. Therefore, For those who have taken exclusive shelter of him, there is attained without effort the destruction of the great chain of miseries and the happiness of attaining Sri Vaikuntha Loka, as stated by the verse beginning Samasrita. His feet are buds on account of their being most tender, being reddish, and so on. Or by the word palava is hinted that his feet are wish-fulfilling trees. The idea being that the pallava of his feet, the buds of his feet, are the individual toes. These feet are a boat. Those who have taken shelter of this boat completely by becoming sharanagata, surrendered, in the sense of having faith only in them, and so on. Even for the great souls, those who are liberated, or for the devotees of the Supreme Lord, such as Narada, the supreme shelter is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who is known as Murari, whose glories, represented by the liberation of Agasura, a punyam, meaning supremely auspicious, or else most super excellent. While Sri Krishna is famous as Murari, the killer of the Daitya Mura, who was the chief general of the army in the army of Narakasura. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has a short comment. In this way, it is proved that Sri Krishna is the final object of pure spiritual love. Only by taking shelter of Krishna's lotus feet does one get liberated and finally realize him. So here is the method. Sharanagata, Sharanagati, full shelter, surrender. The outstanding position of Krishna's devotees is now made clear. Devotees take shelter only of the boat of the lotus feet of Krishna, whose fame is charming, beautiful, and pleasing to the heart. Someone may ask, what is that boat like? The boat of Krishna's lotus feet gives shelter to the great devotees who have taken complete shelter. For these devotees, the ocean of the material world becomes like the water in a calf's hoofprint that can be crossed without any great effort. Their goal is the supreme transcendental abode of Vaikuntha or Sri Vrindavan. Great devotees never fall into difficulty because their minds are not attached to anything except the lotus feet of Krishna. Now, after having concluded here, Sukadeva Goswami continues saying with 1, 2, 3 more verses. Since you have inquired from me, I have fully described to you those activities of Lord Hari that were performed in his 5th year, but not celebrated until his 6th year. Any person who hears or chants these pastimes Lord Murari performed with his cowherd friends, the killing of Agasura, the taking of lunch on the forest grass, the Lord's manifestation of transcendental forms, and the wonderful prayers offered by Lord Brahma, is sure to achieve all of his spiritual desires. Purport. According to Srila Sanatana Goswami, even one who is only inclined to hear and chant the pastimes of Lord Krishna will achieve spiritual perfection. Many devotees seriously engaged in propagating Krishna consciousness are often so busy they cannot chant and hear the pastimes of the Lord to their full satisfaction. However, simply by their intense desire to always chant and hear about Lord Krishna, they will achieve spiritual perfection. Of course, as far as possible, one should actually vibrate these transcendental pastimes of the Lord. We'll read also the comment of Srila Sridhar Swami to this next to last text in this chapter. He says, the Lord's pastimes, along with his friends, have been described in such verses. The subduing of Aga, the taking lunch on the grassy place, and the Lord's appearing in the form of the calves and calf-herding boys, which form was vyatvaktiktarat, distinct from the manifest material creation, or in other words, composed of the pure mode of goodness. Or vyatvaktiktarat refers to spiritual pastimes, the rupam, in the sense of that which delineates such. Thus, and then he concludes, of Aja, so anyone who hears all these pastimes, of Aja, the great, meaning Brahma, offering of praise, those prayers compiled by Brahma, by hearing this and singing it, a person achieves all goals of life. Thus the bee, who is at the feet of Lord Sri Paramananda Nisringa, namely Sridhar Swami, has explained to the extent of his understanding the prayers of Lord Brahma. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, the words Suridbi Charitam pastimes with his intimate friends refers to pastimes like this one described in Srimad Bhagavatam. All the coward boys used to steal one another's lunch bags. When a boy came to understand that his bag had been taken away, the other boy would throw it further away to a more distant place. And those standing there would throw it still further. When the proprietor of the bag became disappointed, the other boys would laugh, the proprietor would cry, and then the bag would be returned. The word vyaktetarad means supramundane, beyond mundane, or transcendental. The phrase ajur abhistavam can be broken down as aja, Lord Brahma, uru, elaborate, and abhistavyam, the offering of prayers. Anyone who hears or chants Brahma's comprehensive prayers about Lord Krishna's transcendental form, his playing with the coward boys, the killing of Agasura, and eating with his friends in the forest covered with lush grass, will have all his desires fulfilled. And as we heard Sanatana Goswami comment from the purport there, that even if one desires that, he will have his desires fulfilled. Even if one wants it, has those inclinations. And the final verse in this chapter: in this way, the boys spent their childhood in the land of Vrindavan, playing hide-and-go-seek, building play bridges, jumping about like monkeys, and engaging in many other such games. Purport. According to Srila Sanatana Goswami, the word Nilayanai refers to games such as hide-and-go-seek or cops and robbers. Sometimes the boys would jump around like monkeys in Lord Ramachandra's army, and then enact the building of the bridge to Lanka by constructing play bridges in lakes or ponds. Sometimes the boys would imitate the pastime of churning the ocean of milk. Sometimes they would play catch with balls. We can find full pleasure in the spiritual world with the simple condition that everything be performed in love, pure love of Godhead, Krishna consciousness. And then the comment of Srila Sanatana Goswami. And then we'll finally read the comment of Vishwanath. What is the need to mention that all these things come about for those who have perfectly taken shelter, since all desired goals are achieved by hearing about and so on of these pastimes of him, Krishna, as stated in the verse beginning Etat. This verse has been explained by Sridhar Swami. Or the pastimes that were performed together with his friends describes all the pastimes, since the activities of subduing Aga and so on were carried out together with them. The engagements of stealing the lunch boxes and so on are not separately mentioned because of being included within the pastimes of subduing Agasura. In other words, anyone who hears these, all these pastimes, has his desires fulfilled. The word vyakhetatar, meaning transcendental to the material world, speaks about all the other pastimes as well. By the words hearing and chanting, it is indicated the fact of simply having such a tendency, hearing to chant and hear these pastimes. By the word a human being is indicated non-dependence on qualification, regardless of who one is. If one just has an inclination for these things, then he has his desires fulfilled. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, and this is the final comment we'll read. King Parikit has asked the question, Brahman kalantara kritam tat kalinam katam bhavet. O great sage, how could things done in the past have been described as being done in the present? From 12th chapter, 41st verse of the 10th canto. Krishna performed the pastime of killing Agasura during his Komara age. How then, during his Poganda age, beginning in the 5th year, could the boys have described this incident as having happened recently? In these chapters, that question has been answered. Now Sukadeva Goswami continues his service of narrating Krishna's pastimes. Krishna and Balaram spent their childhood secretly in Braja, playing hide-and-seek and enacting the pastimes of other incarnations, such as building the bridges to travel, journeying to Lanka and churning the milk ocean. As I, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, stay amongst Krishna's devotees, I have thus concluded this commentary on the 14th chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, named Sarata Darshini, which pleases Krishna's devotees. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, chapter 14 ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai.
Prabhu, I haven't been able to get a report on how the